The year 2023 would transform the Idaho murders case from a shocking crime story into a complex legal chess match between some of the most experienced prosecutors and defense attorneys in the Pacific Northwest. As the initial shock of Brian Koberger's arrest began to fade, the real work of building and challenging a potential death penalty case was just beginning. What emerged over the following 18 months was a masterclass in modern criminal litigation, where cutting-edge forensic science met constitutional law, where genetic genealogy techniques faced their first major courtroom challenge, and where the question of life or death would hang in the balance of legal arguments that pushed the boundaries of criminal justice. The transformation from a criminal investigation to a death penalty case brought with it an entirely new level of complexity and scrutiny. Every piece of evidence would be examined not just for its accuracy, but for how it was collected, analyzed, and presented. Every legal procedure would be scrutinized for potential constitutional violations. Every witness statement would be dissected for inconsistencies or bias. This wasn't just about determining guilt or innocence anymore. It was about whether the state of Idaho would take a human life based on the evidence and procedures used in this case. That reality would drive every decision made by both prosecution and defense teams over the next 2 years. Previously on Brian Koberger, How We Got Here. The January 5th, 2023 release of the probable cause affidavit revealed stunning evidence against Brian Koberger. DNA matching at 1 in 5.37 octillion odds, months of cell phone surveillance, and eyewitness testimony. His first court appearances in Idaho brought emotional confrontations with victims' families and the beginning of complex legal proceedings. The case was moving from investigation into the challenging phase of death penalty litigation. I'm Tony Broski, and this is our look back on how we got here in the case against Brian Koberger, and this is Episode 7, Evidence Battles and Death Penalty Debates. Today we're talking about the year-long pre-trial battle that revealed the complexity of modern criminal prosecution, the defense's aggressive challenges to cutting-edge forensic evidence, and the prosecution's historic decision to seek the death penalty in a case that would test the limits of both science and law. The first major legal battle came just weeks after Koberger's initial court appearances on January 12, 2023, during his arraignment hearing. Koberger stood silently as Judge Megan Marshall asked for his plea to the charges. His defense team, led by public defender Ann Taylor, requested additional time to review the extensive evidence before entering a plea. This wasn't unusual in capital cases, but the defense team's strategy was already becoming apparent. Rather than entering a standard not guilty plea and moving forward, they were preparing to challenge every aspect of the prosecution's case, starting with the evidence that had led to Koberger's identification and arrest. The defense's request for additional time was strategic and necessary. They were facing what prosecutors described as one of the most evidence-rich criminal cases in Idaho history. The prosecution had collected terabytes of digital evidence, hundreds of photographs, dozens of witness statements, and complex scientific analyses that would require months to properly review and understand. Ann Taylor was an experienced public defender with a track record of handling the most serious criminal cases in Idaho. She had previously represented clients in murder cases, sexual assault cases, and other serious felonies. But this case would be the most high-profile and complex of her career. She understood that in a death penalty case, the defense's job isn't just to create reasonable doubt about guilt. It's to save their client's life. This dual responsibility requires attacking the prosecution's case on multiple fronts: the quality of the evidence, the methods used to collect it, the legal procedures followed throughout the investigation, and the constitutional protections that apply to criminal defendants. Each of these areas would require specialized expertise and extensive preparation. Taylor immediately began assembling a defense team that would include additional attorneys, private investigators, forensic experts, and mitigation specialists In death penalty cases, the defense team often resembles a small law firm, with each member bringing specific expertise needed to challenge different aspects of the prosecution's case. On May 22, 2023, the case took a significant turn when a Lata County grand jury returned an indictment against Koberger. The grand jury proceedings were conducted in secret, with prosecutors presenting evidence to a group of citizens who determined whether there was probable cause to believe Koberger had committed the crimes. The grand jury process in Idaho involves 16 citizens who review evidence presented by prosecutors and vote on whether to issue an indictment. Unlike a trial jury, grand jurors don't determine guilt or innocence. They only decide whether there's probable cause to believe a crime was committed and that the defendant committed it. The standard of proof is much lower than the beyond a reasonable doubt standard required for conviction. The decision to seek a grand jury indictment rather than proceeding with a preliminary hearing was strategic for prosecutors. In a preliminary hearing, they would have been required to present their evidence in open court, allowing the defense to cross-examine witnesses and potentially expose weaknesses in their case. The grand jury process allowed them to present their evidence in secret, protecting their investigation strategy and witness testimony. The grand jury indictment was significant for several reasons. First, it eliminated the need for a preliminary hearing where prosecutors would have been required to present their evidence in open court and allow the defense to cross-examine witnesses. By obtaining an indictment, prosecutors could keep their evidence and witness testimony secret until trial. Second, the indictment process allowed prosecutors to present their case to a group of ordinary citizens, essentially conducting a dress rehearsal for trial. The fact that the grand jury voted to indict suggested that the evidence was compelling enough to convince a group of regular people that there was probable cause to believe Koberger was guilty. The grand jury proceedings took several days, with prosecutors presenting evidence including DNA analysis, cell phone data, surveillance footage, and witness testimony. The jurors were able to ask questions and request additional information, giving prosecutors insight into how their evidence might be received by a trial jury. The indictment charged Koberger with 4 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of burglary, the same charges that had been filed initially. But the grand jury process added weight and legitimacy to the charges, moving the case closer to trial and demonstrating that a group of citizens found the evidence sufficient to proceed with prosecution. Following the indictment, Koberger finally entered his plea on May 22, 2023. In a moment that legal observers had been anticipating for months, he stood before Judge John Judge and spoke clearly, "Not guilty." His voice was steady and calm, showing no emotion, as he formally denied the charges that could cost him his life. Judge John Judge, who had been assigned to the case after Judge Marshall recused herself, would preside over what promised to be one of the most complex criminal trials in Idaho history. Judge Judge brought decades of experience in criminal law and had previously handled death penalty cases, though none with the level of media attention and legal complexity that this case would present. The defense's not guilty plea was expected, but it formally set the stage for what would become an extraordinarily complex pre-trial battle. Over the following months, the defense team would file dozens of motions challenging virtually every aspect of the prosecution's case. On June 27, 2023, prosecutors made the decision that would define the rest of the case. They filed a notice of intent to seek the death penalty. The decision came after months of careful consideration and consultation with the victims' families, law enforcement agencies, and legal experts. The decision to seek capital punishment in Idaho requires prosecutors to meet specific legal criteria established by state law. They must prove not only that the defendant committed first-degree murder, but also that aggravating factors exist that make the crime particularly heinous and deserving of the ultimate punishment. Lata County Prosecutor Bill Thompson's decision to seek capital punishment was based on several aggravating factors that Idaho law specifies as justifying the death penalty. The prosecution cited the multiple victims, arguing that the killing of 4 people in a single incident demonstrated exceptional depravity and callousness. They also cited the heinous and depraved nature of the killings themselves. According to the prosecution, the victims were stabbed multiple times while they slept or attempted to defend themselves, demonstrating extreme cruelty and a total disregard for human life. The prosecution further argued that Koberger posed a continuing threat to society. His alleged ability to plan and execute such brutal crimes while maintaining the appearance of a normal graduate student suggested a level of dangerous sophistication that made him a permanent threat to public safety. The decision-making process for seeking the death penalty involved extensive consultation with the victims' families. Prosecutors met with each family multiple times to explain the legal process, the potential outcomes, and the years of legal proceedings that would be involved in a capital case. Some family members expressed strong support for seeking the death penalty, feeling that the magnitude of Koberger's alleged crimes warranted the ultimate punishment. Others were more ambivalent, concerned about the emotional toll that years of death penalty litigation would take on their families. The decision to seek the death penalty transformed the case in fundamental ways. Death penalty cases require different procedures, additional resources, and specialized expertise that most criminal cases don't involve. The stakes were now literally life or death, and every legal decision would be scrutinized by appellate courts for years or decades to come. For Koberger's defense team, the death penalty notice meant they needed to prepare for two separate trials, a guilt phase where they would try to prevent conviction, and a potential penalty phase where they would try to save their client's life even if he was found guilty. The defense team was expanded to include additional attorneys, mitigation specialists, and experts in capital defense. Ann Taylor remained the lead attorney, but she was joined by a team of lawyers with specific experience in death penalty cases, including attorneys who specialized in the penalty phase of capital trials. One of the most significant pre-trial battles involved the defense's challenge to the investigative genetic genealogy evidence that had helped identify Koberger as a suspect. This cutting-edge forensic technique had been used to solve decades-old cold cases, but it had never been tested in a high-profile trial where the defendant's life was at stake. The legal challenge to genetic genealogy raised fundamental questions about privacy rights that courts had never been forced to address. The defense argued that the process violated Koberger's Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable searches and seizures, as well as his due process rights under the 14th Amendment. The constitutional argument centered on the concept of consent and reasonable expectations of privacy. When people submit DNA samples to genealogy companies, they consent to having their own genetic information analyzed and potentially shared with relatives. But the defense argued that this consent doesn't extend to having their DNA used to identify and prosecute family members for crimes. The defense brought in legal experts who testified about the potential for abuse of genetic genealogy techniques. They argued that allowing law enforcement to use this technology without explicit consent or judicial oversight could lead to a genetic surveillance state where anyone's DNA could make their entire extended family subject to criminal investigation. Privacy advocates and civil liberties organizations filed amicus briefs supporting the defense's position. They argued that genetic genealogy represented a fundamental change in the relationship between citizens and law enforcement, allowing investigators to essentially conduct fishing expeditions through people's genetic information without any individualized suspicion. The defense also challenged the scientific reliability of genetic genealogy, arguing that the process involves subjective interpretation and potential for error that makes it unsuitable for use in criminal cases. They brought in genetic experts who testified about the limitations of genealogical databases and the potential for false matches or incorrect family tree construction. Prosecutors countered that the genetic genealogy process was simply an investigative tool that led them to Koberger, and that the actual evidence against him came from DNA collected legally from his family's trash. They argued that the genetic genealogy was comparable to any other investigative technique that helps identify suspects, such as witness descriptions or surveillance footage. The prosecution emphasized that genetic genealogy had been used successfully to solve dozens of cold cases, including murders and sexual assaults, that had gone unsolved for decades. They argued that prohibiting this technique would allow dangerous criminals to escape justice simply because traditional investigative methods had failed to identify them. After months of legal briefs, expert testimony, and oral arguments, Judge Judge ruled that the genetic genealogy evidence could be used at trial, but with certain limitations. The defense would be allowed to challenge the methodology and reliability of the genetic genealogy process during trial, and the jury would be instructed on the limitations of this type of evidence. The ruling was seen as a significant victory for law enforcement and prosecutors who had been concerned that an adverse ruling could affect the use of genetic genealogy in criminal cases across the country. However, the decision also established important precedents about the need for judicial oversight and defense challenges to this emerging technology. Another major pretrial battle involved the defense's challenge to the cell phone tower evidence. Koberger's attorneys argued that the historical cell site location information was unreliable and that the conclusions drawn from it were speculative. The defense brought in their own digital forensics experts who testified that cell phone tower data can be imprecise and that factors like weather, terrain, and network traffic can affect which towers a phone connects to. They argued that the prosecution's timeline of Koberger's movements was based on flawed interpretations of the data. Prosecutors responded with their own expert witnesses who explained the methodology used to analyze the cell phone data and defended the accuracy of their conclusions. They emphasized that the cell phone evidence was just one piece of a larger puzzle and that it corroborated other evidence in the case. Judge Judge ultimately ruled that the cell phone tower evidence would be admissible at trial, but he agreed with the defense that the jury should be instructed on the limitations and potential inaccuracies of this type of evidence. The defense also mounted an aggressive challenge to the DNA evidence despite its seemingly overwhelming statistical certainty. Koberger's attorneys argued that the collection of DNA from the family's trash violated his rights and that the chain of custody for the knife sheath DNA had been compromised. They brought in DNA experts who testified about the potential for contamination, degradation, and laboratory error in DNA analysis. While they couldn't challenge the statistical match itself, they argued that the jury should consider the possibility of human error or contamination in the collection and analysis process. The prosecution's DNA experts responded with detailed explanations of the protocols used to prevent contamination and the multiple quality control measures employed in the laboratory analysis. They emphasized that the DNA evidence had been independently verified and that the statistical certainty was unprecedented in criminal cases. Throughout 2023 and into 2024, the defense team also worked on developing what's known as mitigation evidence. Information about Koberger's background, mental health, and personal history that could be used to argue against the death penalty if he was convicted. Mitigation. Investigation in death penalty cases is a specialized field that requires investigators trained in psychology, social work, and family dynamics. The goal isn't to excuse the defendant's alleged crimes, but rather to provide context that might explain how someone could commit such acts and why their life should be spared. This mitigation investigation involved interviewing family members, teachers, former classmates, and anyone who had known Koberger throughout his life. The defense team was looking for evidence of mental illness, childhood trauma, intellectual disabilities, brain injuries, substance abuse, or other factors that might explain his behavior or make him less deserving of the death penalty. The investigation process was exhaustive and invasive, requiring the defense team to examine every aspect of Koberger's life from birth to the present. They obtained school records, medical records, psychological evaluations, and any other documentation that might provide insights into his mental state and personal history. Family members were interviewed extensively about Koberger's childhood, his relationships with parents and siblings, his academic performance, and any signs of mental health issues or behavioral problems. These interviews often revealed painful family secrets and forced relatives to confront difficult questions about their loved one's behavior. The mitigation investigation also included extensive psychological and psychiatric evaluations of Koberger conducted by defense experts. These evaluations involved standardized psychological tests, clinical interviews, and neuropsychological assessments designed to identify any mental health conditions or cognitive impairments. Some of the most significant mitigation evidence that emerged involved Koberger's mental health history. According to court filings, the defense discovered evidence that Koberger had struggled with depression, anxiety, and social isolation throughout much of his life, particularly during his teenage years and young adulthood. The defense also uncovered evidence that Koberger may have been on the autism spectrum, a revelation that would become significant both for understanding his behavior and for arguing against the death penalty. Autism spectrum disorders can affect social interaction, communication, and behavior in ways that might be relevant to both guilt and punishment phases of a capital trial. Mental health experts retained by the defense conducted comprehensive evaluations to assess whether Koberger met the diagnostic criteria for autism spectrum disorder or other developmental conditions. These evaluations included cognitive testing, behavioral assessments, and interviews with family members about his childhood development and social functioning. The potential autism diagnosis raised complex legal and ethical questions about executing individuals with developmental disabilities. While autism spectrum disorder alone wouldn't necessarily preclude the death penalty, it could be considered as mitigating evidence that might persuade a jury to choose life imprisonment instead of execution. Meanwhile, prosecutors were conducting their own investigation into Koberger's background, looking for evidence of planning, premeditation, and previous violent behavior that would support their argument for the death penalty. The prosecution team discovered that Koberger had purchased several items online in the months before the murders that could be relevant to the case. According to court documents, these purchases included a K-bar knife, a knife sheath, and a knife sharpener, all purchased from the same company that manufactured the sheath found at the crime scene. These purchases, made approximately 8 months before the murders, suggested extensive planning and premeditation. The fact that the items were purchased so far in advance indicated that this wasn't a spontaneous crime, but rather something that had been planned for months. The prosecution also discovered evidence of Koberger's internet search history, which included searches related to the victims, the investigation, and topics related to avoiding detection by law enforcement. These searches would become crucial evidence in establishing his guilt and his state of mind. One of the most controversial aspects of the pretrial proceedings involved a leak of confidential evidence to the media. In May 2024, NBC's Dateline program aired information about the case that hadn't been made public through official court proceedings. The leak included details about Koberger's internet search history, cell phone data, and other evidence that was supposed to remain sealed until trial. Judge Judge called the leak concerning and said it could have lasting repercussions for jury selection and the fairness of the trial. The prosecution and defense both expressed frustration with the leak as it potentially compromised their ability to seat an impartial jury. Judge Judge ordered an investigation into the source of the leak and implemented additional security measures to prevent future unauthorized disclosures. The leak also highlighted the challenge of managing a high-profile case in the age of social media and 24-hour news coverage. Despite gag orders and court-imposed restrictions on information, details about the case continued to emerge through unofficial channels. As 2024 progressed, it became clear that the case would not go to trial as originally scheduled. The complexity of the evidence, the number of pretrial motions, and the challenge of seating an impartial jury in such a high-profile case were creating delays that pushed the trial date further into the future. The defense filed motion after motion challenging various aspects of the prosecution's case, each requiring hearings, legal briefs, and judicial rulings. While this might have seemed like delay tactics, it was actually standard procedure in death penalty cases, where defense attorneys have an ethical obligation to challenge every aspect of the prosecution's case. Judge Judge handled the delays with patience and professionalism, understanding that in a case where someone's life was at stake, it was better to proceed carefully than to rush toward trial. He consistently ruled that The defendant's right to a fair trial outweighed concerns about case scheduling. By the end of 2024, the case had consumed thousands of hours of legal work, involved dozens of expert witnesses, and generated hundreds of pages of court filings. The pretrial phase had become almost as complex as many trials, with legal arguments that would likely influence criminal law and forensic science for years to come. The defense had succeeded in raising questions about some of the prosecution's evidence, but they hadn't been able to exclude the most damaging pieces, the DNA match and the cell phone data. However, they had laid the groundwork for challenging the reliability and interpretation of this evidence at trial. The prosecution had defended their evidence successfully in most of the pretrial hearings, but they had also learned that the defense would mount an aggressive challenge to every aspect of their case. They would need to be prepared to explain complex scientific evidence to a jury and to address the questions that the defense had raised about their investigative methods. As the case moved toward 2025, both sides were preparing for what promised to be one of the most closely watched criminal trials in recent history. The legal battles of 2023 and 2024 had set the stage for a trial that would test the limits of forensic science, challenge traditional notions of criminal investigation, and ultimately determine whether Brian Koberger would live or die for the deaths of four University of Idaho students. The evidence battles had been fierce, but the real test would come when 12 jurors would be asked to weigh that evidence and decide the fate of a man who had once studied the very system that was now prosecuting him. Next time on Brian Koberger, how we got here? The challenge of finding an unbiased jury in one of the most publicized cases in recent memory. The prosecution's decision to change venues and the final preparations for a trial that would captivate the nation and test the boundaries of modern criminal justice.